If you can't be happy today, you can't be happy tomorrow when something else is the case. Because there is no tomorrow. It is a fiction right now. Because when you get to tomorrow, it's just another today. It's just another now. It's just another present moment.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs podcast. I'm super excited, but then again, I'm always super excited and happy. Today, we have our guest, Chuck Allen from way across the country. Chuck, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Greetings from Portland, Oregon.
Greetings. Is it beautiful? Is it rainy? What's going on today?
It's raining. It'll rain five times today and it'll get sunny five times today.
Beautiful. Well, this is a podcast about being happier, and that's what we're going to deliver to the viewers today. So I'm going to jump right in with a hard-hitting question. How does someone redesign their life for ultimate happiness?
I think a lot of people will come to me as a coach and they will want to redesign everything. And when I ask them how the life is going, a lot of times they'll talk about the big things, the marriages, the divorces, the terminations, the promotions, the jobs, the big things. And the reality is those things are a little bit like punctuation at the end of a very long sentence. Your life is made up of the seemingly insignificant moments that are in between all of those sort of big moments, those big decisions. And so when I ask you how your life is going, what you're doing, what it really is the conference calls and the drives to work and the commuting and the grocery store and all of the seemingly insignificant moments that make up the 99% of our lives. So if you want to focus on more happiness, you want to focus on joy, if you don't want to postpone that until everything is just so, then it makes sense to focus on those seemingly insignificant moments that make up all of our day. And there are some ways that people can go about doing that in a very simplistic fashion, but a very effective way.
So before we get to the how, I want to ask a couple of clarifying questions on that. When people come to you, like, what are they seeking when they come to you?
When people come to me, generally, they are sometimes in their late 40s, their 50s, sometimes even their 60s, and they wish they had done something more meaningful or more useful. Maybe they'd follow their strengths earlier in life, and ultimately they wish they'd done something more cool than what they've done. And so I kind of specialize in helping people realize it's not too late to make a cool change. And that's the name of my podcast, Cool Change, by just redirecting their focus a little bit. And that's kind of what I help them with.
Yeah. So let's get into the how a little bit more, because I know someone's listening and they're like, well, if I'm caught in traffic, how can I be happy? And I've learned over the last couple of years how to be happier in any real situation. So tell us, when someone comes to you and asks that question, how can someone be happier washing the dishes or being stuck in traffic?
I mean, look, if you're stuck in traffic, we've all been in a situation where we see the person in front of them, we'll call him Tense Tom. Then you see somebody just off to the right in the other lane, that's Serenity Sam. Their behaviors are very different. You can tell what's going on. Tense Tom is like looking around, trying to get in a different lane, banging the steering wheel, blowing the horn, whatever. Serenity Sam is eased back a little bit. He knows no one's going anywhere for a little while. He's turned on a podcast, maybe some chill music. And the reality is they're both in the exact same situation. When they get to work eventually, or when they get to whatever meeting or whatever they're going to, who is going to have their best selves about them? Who is going to have their best wits about them and available to them? Serenity Sam, who's been chilled, who's been learning, who's been recognizing that the best possible response to a situation that you don't have any control over is to adapt rather than to try to take control of that situation, then if you adapt appropriately like that, then you have an opportunity to arrive at the next place with a lot more peace of mind and a lot more of your energy preserved for where you actually want to place that energy. I learned this lesson probably back in my 20s, and it was probably one of the most groundbreaking lessons that I've ever learned, because I still use it to this day. And in a nutshell, what happened, I was charged with writing a leadership program for the Home Depot, actually. I was working at the Home Depot corporate headquarters, and one evening saw a Tony Robbins commercial, and he was selling this a month-long program. And so I ordered it, thinking that this is going to help me write the leadership program. And when I finally get the materials, Tony said, look, there's something here I want to share with you that if you follow this one thing, then it's going to be worth more than all of the money you spent on all these CDs that I just sent you. And the lesson was this. He basically said, I went for a run with a friend on the volcanic beaches of Fiji, and we got finished this 6-mile run, my friend and I. And at the end of it, I said to my friend, scale of 1 to 10. 10 is the best run we've ever taken. 1 is horrible. What would you say that was? He's like, I'd give it like a 7. I don't know. It's pretty good. Tony's like, yeah, that's what I would give it. Hey, what do you think it would have taken to make it an 8? Maybe we ran in cadence for part of it. That would make more motivating, like call some military cadence a little bit for part of it. He's like, what do you think make it a 9? Well, maybe we do that. And maybe we actually take advantage and look around at, well, I was looking down the whole time. We're in Fiji. It's a beautiful place. Maybe if I appreciated where we were, that'd be an amazing run. I'd call that a 9. Tony's like, man, like what would make it a 10? He's like, you know, maybe the last half mile, we have like our Walkmans back in the day. And we, the last half mile, we put on some kicking Van Halen or something and we sprint to the finish. That would be a level 10 best possible run I can imagine. And so Tony's simple question was, why didn't we do that? And it was based on the idea that the stupidest things that we do as human beings is go into these seemingly insignificant moments that make up all of our day. And we hope they go well. We hope the traffic's not bad. We hope the client's not angry. We hope the weather's not going to be rainy. Rather than decide in advance and ask ourselves the question, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do I feel about this upcoming meeting, this day, this commute, whatever? I'm a 4? What would it take to make it a 6? Just a 6. What could I do differently? Is it a soundtrack? Is it a different climate? Is it a different route? What would make it a 6? If you do nothing more than that, and you repeat that daily through all of those sorts of events of your day, you've increased the quality of your life 50% at that point. That's huge. Simply by making that determination. And so I tried it the next morning. I got up the next morning. I thought, what is my typical routine? I come down, it's freezing. I'm going to like put some tepid water into some instant oatmeal. I'm going to eat it at the sink. I'm going to run water. And then I'm going to go upstairs, take a shower, go to work. I gave it a 2. I do that every morning. It's horrible. I thought, what would make it a 4? Well, I could program the thermostat to actually have it be warm. I could put something on, like a robe or something like that. What would make it a 6? A little bit of some Journey, actually, lights by Journey at the time. Again, dating myself. What else? And then I thought, well, maybe I'll actually get the water hot enough in a kettle. And maybe I'll actually set a place. And I kept on bumping it up. And a moment came when I was sitting there at my breakfast table. I had cold orange juice. I had hot oatmeal. I had a soundtrack playing behind me. I mean, it was just amazing. There was a moment I thought, this is the best dang breakfast I've had in as long as I can remember. And it was so simple. It was so stupid. And so I was hooked on this idea that you could design small moments and upgrade their quality simply by deciding to, even if you don't take it to a 10, you could probably bump it by at least 50%. And if you do that over and over and over again, you have increased the quality of your life significantly.
Love it. I've got up on the screen, all change begins with awareness. So you became aware of something that you weren't doing and you wanted something better and you created the life that you wanted. And even in these small moments, and you said something a couple of minutes ago about like accepting what life gives you, right? There's a quote that I love. The key to happiness is letting each situation be as it is rather than what you think it should be and then making the best of it. I've taken that quote and I've changed it because the best of it, rather than make the best of it, I think everything happens to us for a reason. So everything that happens to us is not about making the best of it. It's like, where can you find a lesson in this? And what you did is you took that lesson of the mundane breakfast and you turned it into something way more positive. And everyone who's listening can do the same thing, right? They can become the tenth Tom to the Serenity Sam by just becoming aware, right?
Yeah, there is a tension between trying to create the life that you want and endlessly doing goal setting and planning and goal setting and planning. I find that people who arc more toward that postpone joy for much of their lives because every day is a shade of failure until they actually get to that goal. And then there's this fleeting moment of celebration because they get there, celebration, fleeting, because now they're going to set this other goal. And now every day is a shade of failure. And so I do think that there is a place for awareness with what's going on right now. And there's a gap between designing the life that you want and allowing life to organically unfold as it will anyway, without postponing joy. So instead of goal setting ad nauseum, what I like to do is pick a point on the horizon. Generally, where do we want to take our life? Generally, what sort of house do we want to live in is the way I think about blueprinting your life. What does it look like? What does it feel like? How often are you there? That sort of thing. It's spacious. and then designing it for that and deciding instead to focus on the momentum each day. Am I heading in that direction? Am I heading to that point on the horizon? If yes, call it a win. Focus on the momentum. And let's not get caught up in postponing joy because everything isn't exactly as we planned or we haven't reached that goal just yet.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think goal setting is important, but I also hear you, what you're saying. A lot of times I would set goals thinking that if I hit them, I would feel inner peace and inner happiness. And when you have this childhood programming that you haven't reprogrammed, that's still holding you back, it doesn't matter what you reach, right? Until you have that inner peace, your goal could be $10 million. It could be $100 million. There's people that have hundreds of millions of dollars and they're miserable, right? They don't have a life by design. They have a life of misery. So I love that. It's really interesting. Are you kind of saying just live each day? And as long as you're heading in the right direction, you're on the right path and be a human being instead of a human doing and just enjoy life, right?
I mean, I would say if you can't be happy today, you can't be happy tomorrow when something else is the case. Because there is no tomorrow. It is a fiction right now. Because when you get to tomorrow, it's just another today. It's just another now. It's just another present moment. So if we can't find the tools and the awareness to sit in gratitude with what we have today, we won't simply be able to do it tomorrow. So right now is the time. And so the way I would think about that is this. If I am in Northern Virginia and I want to get to Portland, I can chart a very specific path taking these interstates and these roads to get there. And then I can chart my progress against that. Or I can simply decide to move west and I'm going to go towards the West Coast and I can focus on my momentum. And am I enjoying the journey at that point? Am I looking at the periphery? What's to my left and my right? Am I finding new opportunities that I wouldn't have seen otherwise if I was just so dead set determined to stay on this interstate and to get there no matter what by this time? If I continue west and I enjoy the journey, the day will come, well, I will pass Portland and I'm continuing. That'll just be a Tuesday and I am enjoying my life. I'm enjoying the journey. And the poor souls who have just been so militantly just trying to get to that city will have stopped, celebrated, and have to figure out what they're going to do next.
Love it. So, Chuck, what's your story?
My story was I grew up in corporate teaching goal setting, performance, I mean, leadership. And I believed differently than I did for many of those years. I spent 25 years teaching all of the things that you would learn in a typical corporate environment. And I'm not going to say that they were bad, but what I would say is that they were unfulfilling to most people. Because when clients come to me, they have done many of the right things. They've done many of the goal setting and many of the achievement-oriented performance management sorts of things. They've worked on their weaknesses to the exclusion of their strengths, unfortunately. And they've done a lot of these things, and yet they're not feeling that they've got enough momentum. They wanted to do something cooler. They wanted to do something more exciting, more adventurous, and they haven't. And so I think a little differently about that. I think there is way more importance on today and the present moment awareness that could exist and the gratitude that rises from that than being so militantly focused on the facade of the fictitious goal that we're just setting out there. And potentially we reach it, potentially we don't. Again, not 100% against goal setting, but goal setting has an insidious downside that if we're not careful, we will postpone joy for the rest of our lives. And so today, I try to live in a place where I am much more appreciative of this moment, recognizing that if I can string together enough of these moments where I feel gratitude, where I'm aware of everything that's been given to me, where I'm aware of my own contribution and all of that, and I can feel joy today, I just string those days together and I have got the life that I want.
Love it. Yeah, gratitude. I have all my clients start a gratitude journal. And one of the things I learned recently is that I ask them to write 5 things at night that they're grateful for and 3 good things that happened in that day. But of the 5 things, I ask them to say, I am grateful for the fact that I love myself. And I'm grateful for the fact that I know that I'm enough. Because when you're grateful for something, it's almost like a brain hack. If you're saying you're grateful, it's already happened. So you're trying to teach yourself that you are enough, because a lot of our problems come from trying to find happiness from outside. And like you said, hitting those goals, but happiness is from within. You have everything you need to be happy inside of you. You always did and you always will. You just have to access it and get those filters off of you from, again, setting unrealistic goals or having this past program that dominates your behavior. So good stuff. So tell us, what do you do now when Tense Tom comes and wants to be Serenity Sam? How do you get Tense Tom to be Sam?
I mean, honestly, there is some logic in there. It depends on how someone is wired. If they are a left brain, sort of a logically minded, functionally minded person, then I would apply logic. How effective has it been when we decide to work outside of our control? Stephen Covey, back in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, talked about the circle of influence. Inside that exists all the things that we can control. And the circle of concern, much bigger concentric circle, all the things that we're concerned or worry about or we spend energy on, but that we don't have any control over. And the only thing inside that circle of influence are our own thoughts, actions, behaviors, reactions, proactions, those sorts of things. Literally everything else is outside of that circle. And the more energy that you put into the things that you actually can control, the more your influence grows. The problem is, Tense Toms of the world are putting all of their energy out here into the circle of concern. And when you do that, you are going to infuse those things with energy, but it will shrink your influence. And so the simple logic of that makes too much sense for a lot of Tense Toms to continue doing that. And they want to shift their awareness to be able to say, okay, well, I guess the question is, what is it that I can control now? Ask yourself better quality questions, you're going to get better quality answers. Instead of, why does this always happen to me? I mean, it's an interesting question. It's just not helpful. What can I do today to make progress and enjoy? How can I sit in gratitude for what's going on with me right now before I take this next step? Ask how and what questions. How can I, what can I do? Sometimes can be more effective than why does this always happen to me, which is a victim mentality. Comes from spending too much time in the circle of concern.
Right. And as I said earlier, I think everything happens for us. So when you can look at life as happening for you and not to you, you get out of the victim mentality and you can hopefully find more joy. So I've listened to some episodes of your podcast. It's pretty amazing. Tell us a little bit about like what inspired you and kind of what your theme is and just, yeah, a little bit about the podcast.
The podcast was born of failure. I had tried to write a book for 2 or 3 years on navigating life change and finding more joy. And designing your life with some intention and also allowing it to unfold at the same time. And I couldn't get past the idea that I was somehow going to be preaching to this nameless, faceless audience and telling them, here are the 6 steps, the 7 steps that you should do. I could never feel good about that. And I was an English major with a writing degree. I mean, I still couldn't pull that off. When I finally gave up on that medium, it turns out that the mission was still there. The purpose still was within me to share that information. And 2 weeks later, the podcast was born. It was the proper medium. And so because that way I could have a conversation with someone, I didn't have to tell them, do it this way every single time. I could rely on their own experience. And then I could draw from my own learning at that point and provide maybe something for them in that moment that makes sense for them. And if I could do that enough times and share it with enough people by the podcast, then somewhere people will find themselves in those stories and they will find what they need. So the way I think about it is it's not my job to fill everyone's cup with everything that they'll ever need. It's simply my job to empty my own into theirs and hope that it will do some good and help them in their own journey.
That's amazing. So I don't know if you know this. If you don't know this, then I'll ask you a different way. What was the most listened to podcast that you've done? And if you don't know that, then what's the most memorable podcast you can tell us about?
I'd say one of the most listened to podcasts was last year in the fall, in October, a gentleman in Oregon who had been battling multiple myeloma for 17 years decided to end his life on his 62nd birthday by self-administered suicide. And so he and his family planned a 62nd final birthday party. His family was there, his mother was there, all of his kids, community, coworkers. And they all showed up to bid him a final goodbye. And so I interviewed him and his wife and his kids the day of his death. Wow. I was there at this barbecue interviewing his mother and trying to mine from everyone the lessons of someone who was facing the day and the hour of their own mortality. And so I left just before he administered his drugs and passed away. And I would say that episode was the most memorable, the most poignant, and probably has garnered the most listens of any episode that I've done.
So what were the greatest lessons that you learned from that?
The most salient lesson that he had to teach was do not live your life from a place of fear. And in a nutshell, that was it. Everything he said and everything that was said around him that day is don't fear and don't live your life from a place of fear. And here's a gentleman who had everything to fear because he knew how many hours he had left in his life at that point, and they weren't many.
Wow. So isn't fear the basis of most of our problems in life, right? It's fearful of what other people will think, fearful of how they're going to judge, fearful if we're lovable, fearful if we're enough. And we were only born with two fears, and that's fear of loud noises and fear of falling and everything else we learned. And so if we learned it, we can unlearn it. And I teach what's from the Book of Miracles. I don't know if you ever read that, but every act that anyone does is a show for love or a call of love. They need love, right? And as a human being, we get to react in one of two ways, either love or fear slash ego. And unfortunately, a lot of people in this world who are hurt from childhood programming, they react in fear. And that's how I reacted most of my life. But when you can react more in love to every situation, whether it be yourself or to others, man, does that unlock happiness and joy. So, wow, that's a really powerful story. I'm not sure I've heard something like that. So, wow. What was the energy and the mood like at the house that day?
You would never know what was up. He was walking around, orange t-shirt and jeans, and came up and said, "Hey, Chuck, good to see you." And was sitting in a chair under a shade tree in a circle, talking to his friends on folding chairs and getting some brisket and having something to eat. And his family was largely having what appeared to be a regular barbecue until I pulled each one of them aside. And I remember his mother in particular having a very difficult time knowing that she only had a few hours left with her son, but also had some really meaningful things to share as well.
So did the mother or you or ever have any thought of why is this happening now and why not tomorrow or a week from now or a month from now?
I think that his mother understood why. She had a hard time accepting it simply because she had to say goodbye to her son and she simply did not want to. So intellectually, everyone was there. Emotionally, not everyone was there. But he made this decision and decided that's when it would occur. And his family was nearby when he passed. And he sort of did it on his own terms. To do this in Oregon, you have to be within 6 months of the end of your life. And two doctors have to agree. And you have to be able to do it yourself of sound body and sound mind. So
I understand. Oh, so if he waited, that could have changed. Okay. So you've helped a lot of clients down this path of designing their life. Is there one client that kind of stands above all the rest in terms of success or just radical change or just another really cool story? Is there one of those you can share with us?
I mean, you know, what comes to mind is at one time, my wife's executive coach, and she has gone through lots of big career changes. But she would say is that the most valuable lessons that she picked up along the way is that a change, a cool change, whatever that happens to be for you, whatever your version of cool is, begins in the mind and begins with a mindset shift. An example of that was early on, I think before I even really started coaching her, she was an executive in a marketing role in a very big company. And a couple of her top lieutenants were with her and they were commiserating one evening. They couldn't get this done and they weren't getting this level of funding or this level of respect. And they were thinking they would go elsewhere and just take their little team and find a new company to do some work. And I remember overhearing their conversation and then approaching them and say, "Let me get this straight. So you guys want to continue working together?" "Yeah. And would you like to walk in the door of this place with some credibility established already?" "Or just, yeah, of course we would, Chuck." "And would you like some budget established already?" "Yeah, we want some budget." "And what kind of things would you like to do?" "Okay, I've got that." In other words, the exact same situation you're in right now. You're working together. You have credibility. You have all of the things that I heard you complaining about. Why don't we fire yourselves and pretend that if someone else in your role and in your industry was at the very top of their game and they walked in Monday morning, what would they do differently than you're doing right now? Do that. Fire the old self, walk in as the new self on Monday, as the new trio, and see what you can do with what you have where you are." And they did over the next 18 months, Julian efforts, and did such amazing work in the marketing space that it became kind of a fun story to think back to that Friday night when everything almost got thrown away.
Wow. And you think that was all attributable just to a different mindset?
It was a different mindset. They recognized that they had what they wanted already if they would simply look through a different lens. And they did not have to leave. The grass was not always necessarily greener. It's always fraught with its own things that you don't expect. And so many times people do not have to make wholesale changes in their lives, their careers, their relationships in order to find more joy or more satisfaction or adventure. They can do those things where they are oftentimes just by making some distinctions like the ones I talked about earlier by focusing on the insignificant moments.
So they started thinking differently, which led to a different emotion, which led to a different behavior. And it's, to me, it's just fascinating because I've lived this the last 3 years. I went through a major life transformation and I see the world completely different. And it's amazing how two people, you could go to a restaurant tonight and you could stand up on the table and you could give a speech. And you're going to have someone who's going to say, that guy, Chuck, wow, what a speech. He's amazing. And then you're going to have someone who's scared and like, this guy's a whack job. And then you're going to have someone who's going to be like, eh, I mean, I didn't even understand what he's saying, or take it or leave it, right?
Yeah.
And it's just incredible how that we can see the same thing and go through the same experience, but leave with such a different story. And that story is really important. The guy sitting in his car tense is telling himself a story. My life sucks. I should be going faster. This traffic shouldn't be here. Sam is sitting there saying, life is pretty good. I'm grateful that I have a car and that I have a job to go to and that I'm healthy, I'm alive, and I'm not like the cancer person that was getting ready to take his life. So yeah, so much of life is just mindset and how you see things, right? Responsibility.
Well, yeah. When people want different results, oftentimes they will go back and do different things. The problem is that all of us have inherited scripts from our youth, from our childhood. And those scripts were shaped by the forces of the people that raised us and the environments that we lived in, the country that we lived in. And oftentimes we do not challenge those scripts and what's in them. And so they become beliefs, or they are beliefs for us. And sometimes we hold those beliefs so strongly, they are convictions and they're very difficult to undo or unwind. But we have to understand it is those scripts, those beliefs, those convictions, which cause us to take the actions that we do. And those then in turn lead to the results that we get. So if you want to have different results, it's not enough to go back and do different things. You need to go all the way back to the underlying beliefs and scripts that are causing you to do those things.
Yes.
That's the real work is to be done. One of my favorite quotes is, for every 1,000 hacking at the leaves of evil, there is one striking at the root. That is striking at the root when you challenge those beliefs and scripts and begin to rewrite those so that you naturally produce different behaviors, different actions without having to use willpower all of the time.
So I think you said a lot of really important things in this half an hour. And I think that was the most important. If I had a mic that I could drop, I would drop it. What Chuck just said is you can't just tell someone change your behavior. You've got to figure out what is causing the behavior in the first place. Go back to that source. That source is all around a story that you're telling yourself, usually untrue, and tell yourself a better story. So Chuck, amazing stuff. Hey, where can someone reach you if they want to reach out to you?
Easiest way, coolchangepodcast.com, or just follow Cool Change Podcast on all the major platforms, Google, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of those.
Beautiful. And in finishing, closing, what did I not ask you that I should have asked you? Or what could you share that you think is really important that wasn't touched?
I wasn't expecting that. I'm going to reiterate something that I said a little bit earlier, and that is this idea that you cannot be happy tomorrow if you cannot find a way to be happy today. Tomorrow will have its own challenges and things that you don't expect, just like today is. Everything is right now. Everything is the present moment right now. There is no time other than right now. The memory is a figment of synapses in our brain. Our imagination, the future, is a figment of synapses in our brain. Why not face reality of where we are right now and learn to enjoy what we have right now by rewriting those scripts? And by therefore taking naturally new action so that we naturally get better results.
Love it. Life doesn't have to be a struggle, guys. Life is about joy and love and relationships. So if you're struggling, reach out to one of us. We can definitely help you. And that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. And if you like it, please share it, like it, subscribe, whatever you do these days. And we'll see you on the next episode. And remember, love does heal all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.